And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, you know, there's been a lot in the news about the tornado spree that took place about 10 days ago. And one of the buildings that was severely damaged was an Amazon distribution center in Edwardsville, Illinois. Building collapsed. At least 6 people died. Major structural damage to the part of the building that didn't collapse. Now, 45 people made it out of the building. Because of the bad weather, a lot of delivery drivers went to the warehouse rather than finish their routes. The in fact, that was a major distribution center, and a lot of other facilities were sending items to that warehouse. Now, the big liberal, Bezos, yes, he's not CEO anymore, but he's still a major controlling factor. If I was in his place, as soon as the debris quit blowing, I'd be standing there going, what can I do for my people? Because a company is only as strong as its people. But from everything I can find out, he hasn't shown up yet. I'd have been making sure everybody who was injured understood that whatever was needed in the way of medical would be furnished at the company expense, since it happened during working hours. And the best place to shelter, they were told, was the bathrooms. Now, you're in an area that has tornadoes, but you don't have any safe areas except the bathrooms. I'd have something to say about that. And, you know, a lot of the liberals have shown themselves to be more concerned with themselves and their pocketbooks than they are with anybody else. Theoretically, a liberal wants to do more for those around them, but not in this particular case. Well, today's December 21st, 355th day of the year. 10 days remain till the year's over with. And a lot of folks going to be glad to see 2021 in the rearview mirror. Now, in the Northern Hemisphere, which is where we're at, December 21st is often the shortest day of the year. And it's sometimes regarded as the first day of winter. Well, I'll tell you, based on the temperatures, we've had winter in West Texas for quite some time. In the Southern Hemisphere, December 21st is the longest day of the year and occurs during the Southern summer. During my years in Panama, this time of year, it rained every afternoon at 2. By 4, you were dry. Well, on this day in AD 69, the Roman Senate declares Vespasian Emperor of Rome. He was the last in the year of the four emperors. 1124, Pope Honorius II is consecrated. Honorius was elected after the controversial dethroning of Pope Celestine II. So apparently, the mere fact somebody becomes pope, which allegedly makes him God's spokesman, doesn't mean that he can't be thrown out of office because other folks don't like him. 1140, Conrad III of Germany besieges Weinsberg. 1237, the city of Ryazan is sacked by the Mongol army of Batu Khan. 1361, the Battle of Nuesa is fought in the context of the Spanish Reconquista between the forces of the Emirate of Granada and the combined army of the King of Castile and of Jaen, resulting in a Castilian victory. The Reconquista was the move to reclaim the Iberian Peninsula from the Moors. 1598, the Battle of Curalaba. Revolting Mapuche, led by Cacique Palantaru, inflicted a major defeat on Spanish troops in southern Chile. 1620, Plymouth Colony. William Bradford and my ancestors on the Mayflower. Land on what's now known as Plymouth Rock in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Another branch of my family, the Tildens, financed the Mayflower. I can't find any record we ever got repaid. 1826, American settlers, Nacogdoches, Mexican Texas, declared their independence. They started the Fredonian Rebellion on this date. 1832, Egyptian-Ottoman War. Egyptian forces decisively defeat the Ottoman troops at the Battle of Konya. 1844, the Rochdale Society of Equitable Pioneers commences business at its cooperative in Rushdale, England, starting the cooperative movement. 1861, Medal of Honor. Public Resolution 82, containing a provision for a Navy Medal of Honor, signed into law by President Abraham Lincoln. 1872, Challenger Expedition. The HMS Challenger, commanded by Captain George Nares, sails from Portsmouth, England. The Challenger Expedition, as it was called, was actually a scientific expedition that made a number of discoveries to lay the foundation of oceanography. The trip was prompted by Charles Wyville Thompson, University of Edinburgh and Merchiston Castle School. The Royal Society of London obtained the use of the Challenger from the Royal Navy in 1872, modified that ship for scientific task, equipped it with separate laboratories for natural history and chemistry. Under the scientific supervision of Thompson himself, the ship traveled nearly 70,000 nautical miles. The result was reported the scientific results of the exploring voyage of the HMS Challenger, which among many other discoveries cataloged over 4,000 previously unknown species. It sailed close to Antarctica, but it didn't get within sight of it. But it was a great start. 1879, the world premiere of Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House in the Royal Theater in Copenhagen, Denmark, took place on this date. 1883, the Royal Canadian Dragoons and the Royal Canadian Regiment, the first permanent force cavalry and infantry regiments of the Canadian Army, are formed. 1907, the Chilean Army commits a massacre of at least 2,000 striking saltpeter miners in Iquique in Chile. 1910, an underground explosion at the Halton Bank Colliery, number 3 pit in Over Halton, West Halton, England, kills 344 miners. There's no definitive determination of what caused that explosion. 1913, Arthur Wynn's Word Cross, the first crossword puzzle, is published in the New York World. 1919, American anarchist Emma Goldman is deported to Russia. Basically, they want to overthrow all governments and put themselves in charge. Kind of like Queen Pelosi. 1923, UK and Nepal formally signed an agreement of friendship called the Nepal-Britain Treaty of 1923. It superseded the Treaty of Sugali, signed in 1816. 1936, there was the first flight of the Junkers Ju-88 multi-role combat aircraft. Germans were quite advanced in aircraft. 1937, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the world's first full-length animated feature, premieres at the Carthay Circle Theater. 1941, World War II, a Thai-Japanese Pact of Alliance is signed. 1946, an 8.1 earthquake and subsequent tsunami in Nankaido, Japan, kills over 1,300 and destroys over 38,000 homes. Since a lot of the homes were made of paper or something approaching balsa wood, a tsunami would certainly do massive damage. 1963, Bloody Christmas begins in Cyprus, ultimately resulting in a displacement of 25 to 30,000 Turkish Cypriots and destruction of more than 100 villages. Bloody Christmas is a term used mainly, but not exclusively, in Turkish Cypriot and Turkish historiography. It refers to the outbreak of intercommunal violence between the Greek Cypriots and the Turkish Cypriots during the Cypriot crisis of 1963. It amounted to a civil war. Violence led to the deaths of 364 Turkish Cypriots and 174 Greek Cypriots. Approximately 25,000 Turkish Cypriots from 104 villages, amounting to a quarter of the Turkish Cypriot population, fled their villages and were displaced into enclaves. Thousands of Turkish Cypriot homes were left behind, and they were ransacked and completely destroyed. About 1,200 Armenian Cypriots and 500 Greek Cypriots were also displaced. This violence precipitated the end of the Turkish Cypriot representation in the Republic of Cyprus. Now, the term Bloody Christmas isn't an official Greek Cypriot term. They contend the outbreak of the violence was a result of a Turkish Cypriot rebellion against the lawful government of the Republic of Cyprus. So it depends on which side you're on as to exactly what you think took place. 1965, International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination is adopted. I'm sure it was done tongue-in-cheek by a lot of the less open countries. 1967, Louis Swaskowski, the first man to undergo a human-to-human heart transplant, dies in Cape Town, South Africa. He lived for 18 days after the transplant. 1968, Apollo program. Apollo 8 is launched from the Kennedy Space Center. Put his crew on a lunar trajectory for the first visit to another celestial body by humans. 1970, the first flight of the F-14 multi-role combat aircraft took place on this date. 1973, the Geneva Conference on the Arab-Israeli Conflict opens. 1979, Lancaster House Agreement. This was an independent agreement for Rhodesia, signed in London by Lord Carrington, Sir Ian Gilmore, Robert Mugabe, Joshua Nkomo, Bishop Abel Morzerua, and S.C. Mundawarara. 1988, bomb explodes on board Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Dumfries, and Galloway, Scotland. 270 people are killed. To date, this is the deadliest air disaster to occur on British soil. 1988, the first flight of the Antonov An-225 Mraya, the largest aircraft in the world, took place on this date. 1992, a Dutch DC-10 flight Martin Air MP-495 crashes at Faroe Airport, kills 56 people. 1995, city of Bethlehem passes from Israeli to Palestinian control. 1999, the Spanish Civil Guard intercepts a van loaded with 950 kilograms of explosives that ETA intended to use to blow up a Torre Picasso in Madrid, Spain. Now, the ETA was the Euskadi ta Askatasuna, or Basque Homeland and Liberty, or Basque Country and Freedom. It was an armed Basque nationalist and separatist organization in the Basque Country. That's northern Spain and southwestern France. Group was founded in 1959 and later evolved from a group promoting traditional Basque culture to a paramilitary group engaged in a violent campaign of bombing, assassination, and kidnapping in the southern Basque Country and throughout Spanish territory. Its goal was gaining independence for the Basque Country. It's the main group within the Basque National Liberation Movement and the most important Basque participant in the Basque conflict. (Clears throat) 1999, Cubana de Aviación Flight 1216 overshoots the runway at Laura Aurora International Airport. 18 people are killed. 2004, Iraq War. Suicide bomber kills 22 at the Ford operating base next to the main U.S. military airfield in Mosul, Iraq. That's the single deadliest suicide attack on American soldiers. And in 2020, a great conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn occurs, with the two planets separated in the sky by 0.1 degrees. That's the closest conjunction between the planets since 1623. Well, there's a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. In the Philippines, it's Armed Forces Day. Christian Feast Day, Orion's. Peter Canisius, Thomas the Apostle in the Anglican Church. Earliest usual date for the winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere and the summer solstice in the Southern Hemisphere. Among some modern American liberal Protestant groups, it's Blue Christmas. In Asia, it's Dongzi Festival. It's Sangamitra Day in the Theravada Buddhism. Yule in the Northern Hemisphere, that's the neo-pagan wheel of the year. Zimasvetki in ancient Latvia. Forefathers Day in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Sao Tome Day in Sao Tome and Principe. First day of Pancha Ganapati, celebrated till December 25th in the Saiva Siddhanta Church. We got more churches, more different religions, all allegedly worshiping the same God. Okay, let's see what we got. Well, we have In 1902, a group of investors planned to spend $5 million to $15 million to build flour mills in major cities in Ireland. The Irish flour business was failing due to importing grain from America and other countries. In 1933, property crimes with violence had increased in Scotland. In 29, there were 954 property crimes, and by 1932, there were 1,528. Well, we will try one more. December 21st is known as the Look on the Bright Side Day. And Phineas Fogg Win a Wager Day. In 1163, hurricane hits villages in Holland and Friesland, causing major floods. 1561, Antoine Perrineau de Granville, Archbishop of Mechelen, is made cardinal. 1784, John Jay, first U.S. Chief Justice, becomes acting U.S. Secretary of State on this date in 1784. 1788, Hu Thay Son becomes Emperor Quang Trung of Vietnam. 1829, the first Stone Arch Railroad bridge in the U.S. is dedicated in Baltimore. In 1849, the first U.S. skating club is formed in Philadelphia. On this day in 1864, General Sherman conquers Savannah, Georgia. Unfortunately, he gave it back. 1866, Fetterman Massacre. Lakota, Cheyenne, and Arapaho Indians kill all 81 U.S. Army soldiers in the worst military disaster ever suffered by the U.S. Army on the Great Plains. On this day in 1872, Phileas Fogg completes his around-the-world trip in 80 days and Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 days. In 1891, the first game of basketball based on the rules created by James Nesmith is played by 18 students in Springfield, Massachusetts. In 1894, Mackenzie Bowell becomes the fifth Prime Minister of Canada. It was on this day in 1898, scientists Pierre and Marie Curie discover radium. In 1909, University of Copenhagen, from their warm rooms, reject the American explorer Frederick Cook's claim he was the first to reach the North Pole. Okay. 1921, Supreme Court ruled that labor injunctions and picketing is unconstitutional. This day in 1923, Nepal changes from British protectorate to an independent nation. 1 Coco the Clown. World famous, first appears for Bertram Mill Circus in Manchester, England. And one last thing, in 1933, Fox Films signed Shirley Temple, who was 5 years old, to a studio contract. And on that note, we've come to the end of our little history segment. You know, there's been a lot of strangeness. And there has been a lot of research done by people that in many cases have been laughed at for giving credence to what most people look at as myths and legends. You know, the Franco-Cambrian cave artist of 25,000 B.C. left portraits depicting ghostly creatures and a variety of two-legged beings with the heads of animals and birds. Ethnologist Ivar Lissner suggests that the Stone Age artists were portraying intermediary beings who were stronger than common man and woman, and able to penetrate more deeply into the mysteries of fate. Also, what you might call that unfathomable interrelationship between animals, men, and gods. The earliest figurative cave art discovered so far dates back to about 40,000 years ago. That's the date given to the depiction of a disc-shaped drawing found in El Castillo Cave in Cantabria, Spain, and a stencil of a human hand found on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia. 2014, 10,000-year-old rock paintings were found about 120 miles from Raipur in India. Archaeologist by the name of J.R. Bhagat commented on the bizarre coincidence that some of the beings in the prehistoric carvings resembled the science fiction aliens depicted by Hollywood and Bollywood films. Other researchers pointed out that some nearby villages in the tribal Bastar region worshipped these rock paintings and repeated ancestral accounts of small beings who used to land from the sky on round-shaped objects. On occasion, these Rohilla people, as they're called, the small-sized ones, We'll take persons from the village with them back to the heavens. Bhagat found it intriguing that some of the figures in the rock paintings even appeared to be wearing space suits and holding strange weapons. He also admitted that we modern people can't refute the possibility of a colorful imagination might be possessed by prehistoric people, but usually only contemporary humans imagine such things as visitors from other worlds or other realities. Then we've got rock art discovered in Barrier Canyon in Utah that dates back as far as 4,000 or 5,000 years. And it includes depictions by the old ones of humanoid figures with antennas sprouting from the top of their heads. You know, down through the millennia, in world folklore, religion, and myth, there are accounts of dozens of visitors, watchers, and eavesdroppers who seem to regard us humans as a cosmic curiosity, worthy of their seemingly constant attention. Now, some of these beings may have assumed the task of teaching us or shaping us in various evolutionary ways. Others, though, may have had little interest in improving our intellect, personal hygiene, or manners from our ages in the caves, and may be perpetually devising new methods of controlling and exploiting us. It would seem apparent that when our species first discovered how to paint figures and symbols on cave walls, we simultaneously discovered a means of recording our encounters with these mysterious visitors, who often manifest as strange entities who are different from us and who seem more closely associated with deities and spirit beings in other worlds. Thousands of years ago, Paleolithic artists had to be content with sharing their experiences with their extended families and tribespeople who would visit their caves for religious or social ceremonies. Today, these individuals who've come face to face with what you might refer to as the others only have to sit down at their computers and send certain men and women considered expert in interpreting such encounters an email. There was a individual by the name of Elisa who saw an angel. According to the report, as a child, she was playing with a friend from late elementary school, early middle school, about 10 or 11 or so. They went to somebody's property close by their house in which they had wooded section in their backyard there that used to be part of a large forest. They said they entered and went as far as the end of the tree patch, and they were awestruck by the discovery the area felt so beautiful and serene. They were both overcome with the sensation that something out of the ordinary was about to happen. Suddenly, in a patch of grass at the center of the clearing stood a beautiful glowing girl next to a bird fountain. She was so bright that the light emanating from her nearly hurt their eyes. Her friend stood and stared for a moment and then turned and ran. Alicia said she wanted to approach the beautiful girl but ended up running behind her friend. They stopped mid-forest and got their nerve up and decided to go back, but the so-called angelic presence was gone. Then you've got an individual by the name of Brandy who encountered an unusual figure. According to the story Brandy told, the event happened when, I'm assuming, spelled with I-E, Brandy is a female, when she was coming home from night class. Wasn't quite winter yet. She'd walked from the station at Mattapan Square, coming into Milton. It's after she left the parkway and stepped into Ferncroft that she felt a little itchy. It's about 10:30 in the evening. Only person on the street. Wouldn't consider it dangerous as it's lined on all sides by houses and greenery, but as she walked, she kept looking around. Wasn't sure why. It was dark, but something just felt a little off. As she got near this one particular house that was five houses from her, something seemed to be happening. It had a lion knocker on the door, and she remembered passing by in the morning. As she got close to it, there was this light coming from the front door. It seemed like a holograph. Got close, she wasn't scared because she thought someone was doing a light show or had a cool night light in their doorway, but she was curious. When she got almost in front of that house, she noticed a warped, shining figure that was just fading in and out. Seemed to have some trouble manifesting until it exploded into a statuesque figure of a woman standing in the doorway. She appeared to be between the wooden door and the screen door. Now, there was no real room for a person to be in that position, but that's the appearance. The way it happened was unexpected and sudden that Brandy had literally screamed in surprise. After screaming, she clutched her chest, felt like her heart was going to stop dead. The woman was floating and seemed massive as she took up most of the doorway. And the presence was described as phantom-like. She wore a green shawl or dress that stopped below her collarbone. Hair was pale blonde, wrapped in some sort of back bun, but there were pieces and strands floating everywhere. She seemed matronly, but had what you might call a haggard appearance. Her features were smooth and blank, as if she wasn't aware of anything. She never looked at Brandy. She just kept staring straight ahead up a side street. Brandy looked away for a second, but didn't see anything, and the eyes made her look like she was blind. Or maybe dead. They had a milky, filmy look, and her features were old, but really not old. It was hard to explain. They kept changing till at one point, Brandy couldn't even be sure of the woman's exact age, and the skin was an unhealthy pallor. Whatever dimension or realm this woman existed in, there was a lot of wind. It blew her dress, hair, and the closest objects close to her. Now that night, at their location, there was no wind. But what marked this as the most unique experience Brandy ever had was the light that poured from all around her. The twilight realm was glimpsed and shone spectacularly. The eerie coldness of the light can't even be described. And the woman herself was luminescent. Well, Brandy decided it was time for her to be elsewhere. Then we've got Peter, who reported an experience of what he called a watcher. He said he was lying in bed one night reading the scriptures when his dog Bo's tail perked up and she growled. Peter looked up and a being, for lack of a better word, walked through the door. Not that he opened it, he just walked through it. Dressed sort of the way he'd picture a medieval monk, with a long flowing robe and a huge hood that covered all of his face. In fact, Peter never really saw the face. He was startled, of course, but he tried to be nonchalant, as if this was commonplace. He grew up with a resident spook in his house, so it wasn't as if he was scared witless. He stood motionless for what seemed like a long time, then turned and walked through a brick wall. Now, Peter was stunned, but eventually resumed his reading. He only told this story to one other person, that was a nurse who helped him through a kidney transplant. She seemed to think that individual was a watcher. Now, Peter said he'd heard of these so-called watchers, and he could only gather some are good and some are not so good, kind of like humans. Then we have a UFO crash reported by South African Air Force. The Gagalagadi Transfrontier Park is wedged between South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia. 1989, when Namibia was in the process of becoming independent from South Africa, there was a UFO that was shot down by the South African Air Force using a laser cannon on one of the fighter jets. The debris of this UFO were scattered over a portion of the Gagalagadi Park, was quickly collected and removed. Agents of the American government came to retrieve their artifacts within 24 hours of the incident. Now, the South African and the U.S. government had an agreement that if any UFOs were shot down over South Africa, they would be collected and shipped to America. Now, very few people knew about this particular UFO incident, but word leaked out. Unfortunately, there are no images to support the account. It occurred when the individual telling the story was serving in the South African Air Force. And as you might guess, incidents such as this are quickly covered up. The apartheid government was in power at the time, and with the fervor of nationalism heavy in the air, the individual telling the story would have faced some serious military charges and served time in the stockade if he had released any information to upset the political machinery. Just a few weeks before this particular individual decided to tell his story, he had a vision while at church. It was of the creation of several universes simultaneously. The vision lasted for about 10 minutes. A number of people have reported unusual visions while in church. When I was much, much younger, I had one. Went to a country church. Well, got an individual named Blaine who decided to tell the story of his UFO sighting that had never been told publicly. It was in the early 80s or late 80s or early 90s. Blaine was living in Oregon at the time in a small community next to Mount Hood called Colton. I got into woods on a summer day and heard it could only be described as a sound identical to the sound of a spacecraft taking off, as shown in the series The Twilight Zone. After hearing the noise, Blaine ran in the opposite direction from the noise, looked up, witnessed a blue fireball streak across the sky at about 150 to 200 feet. Objects moving at tremendous speed and also had a type of force field surrounding it as if to mask its actual size. Blaine also noticed it was being chased by a U.S. Air Force jet, but it was moving at a slower speed and directly behind the fireball. After the sighting, Blaine contacted a friend who lived in the immediate area and was able to confirm that he too had seen the jet flying in the same area that day and noted the jet appeared to be chasing something, but he couldn't see the fireball itself. Blaine decided that the object was a type of probe or robot drone sent out to collect data for whatever purpose and report back to its point of origin. Now, prior to this, Blaine had been very skeptical about the existence of UFOs, but after this particular sighting, that skepticism vanished. From UFOs, let's turn to ghosts. The individual telling the story said it was about July 2001. His grandmother passed away, and her death was very hard for him to take. She had raised him, so it was like losing a mother. He was devastated. After the funeral, he needed to be alone, so he walked outside into a small tree-lined area near the house, sat down on a stump, began to cry. Then, in what was clearly an audible voice, heard his grandmother call his name. Tone of voice was as if it was scolding me for being upset. I turned and there was nobody there, but there was no doubt that it was the grandmother's voice, even though she was dead. Now, he told his family about it, but they brushed it off as imagination playing tricks because of the grief. Four months later, happened to listen to a radio program where such communications were being discussed. Totally amazed at the stories. Apparently it's relatively common for those grieving to hear the voices of those that have passed on. Then we got a story about Michael and his father. Going fishing in a thickly wooded area in rural Marinette County in Wisconsin. Catch had been slim and the sun was going down. With night setting in, they decided to get their equipment and go home. They got in the father's truck and began driving off when all of a sudden they spotted a middle-aged woman dressed in red riding gear seated on horseback, blocking the exit from the clearing in the woods. She Must be nice to have all the time in the world so you can call folks and just sit there and say nothing. Well, Michael and his father had encountered a woman dressed in red sitting on horseback. She glared at him as if they were trespassing into an area they shouldn't have. Michael and his father drove on as... I tell you, people call and think you should drop everything to deal with whatever extraneous issues they have to deal with. Well, Michael and his father had encountered the woman on horseback. And as they left the clearing, Michael glanced back at the woman, who was clearly angry, and she had gone. The windows were down, and they commented they hadn't heard a sound from her. Not even the sound of hooves on the horse. It was a highly unusual experience, even if it had been a flesh-and-blood horse rider. Who'd be riding a horse through the woods alone at night, dressed in formal riding garb in rural Marionette County, Wisconsin? Certainly, there's more to that story. Now, in another similar incident, an individual named Matthew had a traumatic experience, and he seemed to be becoming aware of having his consciousness in two places at the same time. One is on Earth, and the other is on another world. I easily describe that part of the world that I'm in as the same way I can describe where I live on Earth. The other world is desert-like. Though its mineral composition has a lot of blue and gray in it, it's peaceful, cool, and contemplative place. No water, no trees, but there are long, flat, white, and translucent stones that you can lie down on. And they radiate an energy that is absolutely revitalizing. There are people around with light blue skin. They seem to be involved in some kind of geological study. And he said he encountered a male and female near him, and they seem to be working with him. That's about all he can say. He said he wasn't sure if this was a memory or a real-time awareness of this world, but he's experienced practically everything in the realm of the so-called unknown, so he's not going to swiftly blow it off as a delusion. Certainly, there are those who have reported, shall we say, strange encounters. Now, it's been determined that one truly essential factor in humankind is spirituality. Artificial concepts that are given the designation of science are no truer in the ultimate sense than dreams, visions, and inspirations. The quest for absolute proof or objective truth may always be unattainable when it seeks to define and limit the soul. And there are those that believe that you can achieve a high level of education and still maintain a firm belief in the unseen world. In a January 20, 2006 issue of Live Science, Robert Britt wrote, "According to a new study, higher education is linked to a greater tendency to believe in ghosts and other paranormal phenomena." And even though researchers Brian Farah at Oklahoma City University and Gary Stewart, University of Central Oklahoma, admitted they had expectations of finding contrary results, their poll of college students found that seniors and graduate students are more likely to believe in haunted houses, ghosts, telepathy, spirit channeling, and other paranormal phenomena than freshmen were. And although the results of the survey weren't surprising to longtime researchers in the metaphysical fields. What is startling is the fact that the poll analysis is published in the issue of Skeptical Inquirer magazine. That's a journal for true unbelievers. And while the poll may have been conducted with expectations of demonstrating that as students become more educated, they drop questionable beliefs in favor of more skeptical attitudes, Skeptical Inquirer should be congratulated for publishing results that it really didn't want to find. Now, the survey was based on a nationwide Gallup poll in 2001 that found that younger Americans were more likely to believe in the paranormal than older respondents. Results of the poll showed that gaining more education was not a guarantee of skepticism or disbelief toward the paranormal. Only 23% of the freshman quiz professed a belief in paranormal concepts, but the figures rose to 31% for college seniors and 34% for graduate students. The complete results of the survey can be found in Skeptical Inquirer magazine. Well, there have been a number of folks who have had near-death experiences. And one story, I think, illustrates the fact that we don't understand everything. It came from April 2015. A gentleman named, by the initials BK, reported he'd had a near-death experience while he was being transported to a hospital in an emergency ambulance. Now, he was described as an accomplished artist, the author of a number of books, an individual with vast life experience, 20 years in U.S. Navy intelligence. As he recovered from his frightening ordeal, his perception of life has altered somewhat. He asked the question that many have toyed with, who or what's dreaming this life? I think it's not me. The me who was me before I died, it's not that one. He began having odd, never-before-imagined thoughts almost immediately after the event. He began to think he actually did die, that he never came home. He didn't resume his before life. He began to wonder if someone or something that he can't define as dreaming this life. He seemed to become an observer rather than a participant in his current life. Everything seems foreign and complicated. Then he asked the eternal question that's haunted so many men and women in ages past and continues to perplex so many experiences. Well, I awaken one day to find that all of life is nothing but a middling dream that none of us has ever been manifest in a corporal sense. And that's a question that I've heard expounded on many times. And no one, as far as I'm aware, has ever come up with a definitive answer. You know, I read something written by author Brad Steiger about a survey that he and his wife undertook. And a great number of respondents to the questionnaire that they sent out are professionals who work with in the helping vocations of our society, psychologists and what have you. In 2015, the questionnaire, first created in 1967, became known as the Steiger Questionnaire of Mystical Paranormal and UFO Experiences, and over 40,000 individuals have responded. Of that number, 87% indicated they'd experienced the activating vision of seeing a paranormal, angelic, or otherworldly being at about the age of 5, and 88% testified they made contact with paradimensional and multidimensional intelligence while undergoing a life-altering event between the ages of 6 or 7. Now, George Vents, an engineer physicist who has followed this area of study, commented, there are many dimensions that exist we can't see or fathom. If all the research he's done over the years, it's obvious that beings from other dimensions do visit this planet and have done so for thousands of years. Now, they don't have a desire to harm us or alter our lifestyle. Their point of entry or exit into our dimension are purposely all located deep within the planet's ocean so that they won't be disturbed by any Earthlings who've not yet evolved their intelligence level. And if that is the case, how do you know if the individual you meet is not one of the, for lack of a better term, the others? Security guard, the Metropolitan Detroit, Michigan, had an encounter with two strange people from another dimension that quite likely should have been sent back to their own world. According to what he said, in 1974, he was employed by a security agency in Metro Detroit. His company was a contractor, provided armed security guards to various companies and corporations. And one such company was one of the largest supermarket chains in that Detroit area. And he was dispatched to one of their stores that was enduring a massive amount of shoplifting. When he got to the supermarket, he was briefed by the store's general manager that a recent inventory revealed a few $1,000s worth of meat was missing. Now, these inventories are done routinely, and the problem had come to light just recently. And the store manager was happy that the security guard was armed and in uniform and hoped his appearance would stop the theft. Now, the store was located deep within the inner city, where such crime is a common occurrence, and roughly 95% of its clientele and employees were African American, which made his encounter with the visitors all the more unusual. Now, the first few nights of his posting was relatively uneventful. The meat department was like such other stores located in the rear. Beyond that was an unloading dock with sliding doors that was secured and opened only on the arrival of the merchandise. And that was the area where he spent most of his time and effort. Now, outside of a few kids trying to steal bologna or smoke sausage, there were a few problems. Then on the next night, he experienced something he's never been able to explain. As usual, he was standing at the store's meat and dairy area, taking mental notes while viewing customers at the meat counter. And then he noticed an unusual couple. They were looking through various cuts of meat and filling their cart accordingly. What piqued his curiosity was their appearance. Both the man and the woman were rather short, about 5'2". The man was dressed in a very unusual fashion. Both were extremely pale, even for white folks, which he assumed they were. The man was dressed in what the locals would refer to as a Superfly outfit, powder blue jumpsuit complete with a matching fedora with a colorful feather. Woman was more nondescript in a plaid skirt that went down to her ankles and a light-colored sweater, but her hair was bright red, in sharp contrast to her pale skin. Both appeared to be very anemic. Man's hat rested on top of a very bald head, and he couldn't see a hairline. In fact, his face appeared hairless. Not even eyebrows could be seen. The paleness told him they were probably not husband and wife, but rather maybe brother and sister. Excuse me. Another strange aspect was a complete lack of reaction by other customers. They'd walk past these two without even looking at them. Now, he would normally assume the sight of them would engender a reaction of shock or maybe amusement, but it was as if they were invisible. In fact, the guard was the only one that seemed to see him. He'd been watching him for about 3 minutes when the woman noticed him. She nudged the man and pointed in his direction. They both stared at him. At that point, he had decided to approach them when somebody suddenly tugged at the back of his shirt. He turned to find a small boy, maybe 7 or 8 years old, telling him some older kids were pushing a cart of stolen goods out the door. Well, he rushed to the entrance and saw nothing and went back outside and saw no kids pushing a cart away from the building. So he went back to the store to find that the young boy had vanished. He ran back to the meat counter and found that the couple had also vanished. He rapidly walked past each aisle looking for him. Then he ran to the cashiers, knowing if the odd couple had checked out, they surely would have been noticed. The cashiers hadn't seen him. He proceeded back to the unloading area, which was uninhabited, went outside of the parking lot to see if they were loading up their car, but didn't find them there either. Went back and asked the cashier if they'd ever seen the people he described, and nobody had. In fact, he never found any trace of the boy, the couple, or even the cartload of meat. Sometimes wonder if it's just his imagination or something that for all these years has remained unexplained. Many who've seen these strange visitors have, after years of puzzling over the encounters, placed the bizarre incident in their must-have-been-my-imagination file. It's interesting to note that the odd pasty-faced couple had an accomplice to deter the guard's attention when he finally decided to approach him. Well, rather than be accompanied by something that appears as a small human, they created the image of a helpful child out of plasma energy. There was no determination made as to whether or not there had been an inventory depletion. Certainly that would have been my next step. But it does raise the question, are there others who walk among us that we don't seem to realize? It would seem to me that if in fact no one was paying attention to these unusual looking people, that they very probably are not used to being seen by those around them, which would allow them to come and go as they please. And to dress in the fashion that he reported them being dressed shows us they probably chose their outfit based on a reconnaissance that may or may not have been up to date. Well, on this particular note, we've run out of time once again. So until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying, be careful as you go about your daily life because you may come in contact with the others. Till tomorrow, Ken Hudnall saying, have a truly great evening.